Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. My dear friends, my confidence in the afterlife details I've been sharing with you, my confidence they're true, comes from the fact that we have hundreds of communications from the dead received during what we'll call, I like to call, the golden century of afterlife communication, which was from roughly 1840 to roughly 1940. Nobody listening even remembers those days, but they were big days in this field. These communications came through deep trance mediums, physical mediums, various kinds of channels in southern England and in the eastern United States. And the beauty of it is, and the thing that was my epiphany, is that they all agreed perfectly about where the communicators are now, what life is like there, all the process, the details, everything agreed. So that was when I understood for the first time that all this evidence I'd been studying, it was a big picture, but it was all talking about the same picture. It was all real. I think that that body of evidence, which was produced, 100 years ago, is the best proof we have, even though we've gotten a lot of proofs later, that life after death is wonderfully real. But for reasons that we're going to talk about today, that kind of really easy communication with the dead that was common 100 years ago is almost unheard of now. And few people living today have even heard of anything except for mental mediums or spiritual mediums, which really, that's the least effective way to do this work. But fortunately, there are wonderful people working to preserve the records that detail the work of those early mediums. And one of those researchers is with us today. His name is N. Riley Haggerty, and he's done a lot of digging and come up with a fascinating book about the Bang Sisters. Believe it or not, that's their name. They're two gifted early American mediums who worked, before the turn of the century and around that time. His book is called Portraits from Beyond, and you will not believe why it has that title. But meanwhile, we're going to learn a lot from Riley today, so I'm so glad. Riley, I'm so glad to welcome you. I'm so glad you're with us.
Yes, thanks for having me, Roberta. It's nice to talk with you again.
Apparently, he and I have met before. We were just sharing details of that before we came on air, and I like that. I sort of feel we have a little bond then. But, Riley, tell us a little about your past. I mean, you and I have what many people would think of as lunatic hobbies, studying aspects of what it's like to be dead. What got you started on this? Were you growing up? Were you normal as you grew up?
I was a very normal Roman Catholic 100% Irish family in upstate New York. And I went on to become a professional musician, actually, in Philadelphia. Later on, after college, I went to Philadelphia. I was signed to an agency as a musician, and I was signed for 20 years as a performing musician. To make a long story short, my fiancé, 28-year-old young lady, was struck down by leukemia at the height of my career. And after 5 months in the oncology ward of Johns Hopkins Hospital, right towards 2 weeks before she passed away, she called me to the bedside with these astounding clairvoyant visions she had of her son, Bradley, who had passed away 14 years previous. I knew very little about this fact of her life, that she had had a child when she was very young, like 16 years old.
Yeah.
She called me to the side of the bed and said, prepare yourself because my son's been coming every night and telling me that he's coming to take me over the other side of the river.
And, really?
So it happened. It was all true. She passed away exactly when she said that he was going to take her across. And from that point on, I made an about face and dedicated my life to studying life after death and spiritualism, spirit communication, and I had no intention of doing it. None. My sole mission was to perform music. So it was a complete and total turnaround.
So when did this happen? When did this begin for you then? Was it just a few years ago?
1986.
6 years ago. That's not very long. Oh, 86. Okay. All right. That makes a little more sense because you seem to be really steeped in this information. I know you didn't come across it quickly. Well,
that's
it's sad. It's sad you lost her, but what a gift she's given you in opening your mind and heart to doing this wonderful work. And you became a spiritualist. A lot of people don't know what this means. This is a specific religion. It began, as I understand it, in England, and anyone doing this work becomes very familiar with the work of the spiritualists. But how did that start for you, that you became a spiritualist?
I just started by myself. Once I was inflamed by the loss of the young lady, my senses were on alert, like anybody would be who's going through a loss. And instead of just having a burden and the monkey on my back of all that kind of depression that comes with having lost someone, I did something about it. I went and started reading everything I could about life after death and spirits. And book hunting was the first thing I did. And I collected everything I possibly could. I started with Raymond Moody, you know, the near-death experiences, and then it worked my way up. And now I have a collection after almost 30 years, a massive collection of old, rare books by some of the greatest authors on spiritualism. I now have a tremendous library of books. I've read every one of them. It just keeps going around and around. I read them all. Then I go back to square one and start reading them all over again.
Oh, my goodness.
Everybody has to go on their own journey themselves. For myself, I just love doing the research because I had to have some answers. I had no answers from the Catholic Church.
Right.
So I said, I'm going to find out, what is there a life after death, and can spirits communicate with the living? And I can't even think of the words, how abundantly true it all is, how it's so true. And like you said, the century of wonders, I actually put it between 1848, because 1848 was the birth of so-called modern spiritualism with the Fox sisters.
Yes.
1848 to 1948, the 100 years of wonders.
It is amazing. It's an amazing time.
All, you said in your book, The Fun of Dying, or one of your great quotes was, how much evidence for life after death was conclusively proven within that time period, swept under the carpet by the orthodoxy and science of the day, but all the proof one could ever possibly need of life after death was in that century. No question whatsoever. The Bang sisters are just one example of many.
That's what's amazing to me, because when I stumbled on all of this, and I started with Raymond Moody too, I had done research before 1975, but unless you already knew what you were looking for, it was hard to do that. But then there was a floodgate of very good, you know, people were putting together what had happened in that time and writing books about it. So I started doing what you did, collecting the books. You could buy them very cheaply and reading them. And I recommend to anybody, if you're interested in knowing about this stuff, try to find it in the original, because there's something about picking up a book that these people would have handled themselves, perhaps. It's almost a sacred experience, but it's real information. And I've never seen two duplicated examples of communications through these deep trance mediums. So I know, and it's in two different parts of the world too, in Southern England and in the Eastern United States. Let's talk a little bit about the Bang sisters and then what their talents were. They were born, you tell me again when they were born.
They were born in Chicago. Elizabeth, the younger, was born 1859, and May was born 1862. So they weren't twins, they were a couple of years apart.
But you say that from the beginning they had gifts. Tell us about their early childhood psychic gifts.
Well, the first thing I should say as far as children mediums is that the parents were sympathetic towards their gifts. So for every one medium that had sympathetic parents, rest assured there was probably back then dozens whose parents were not sympathetic towards their gifts and consigned their own child to mental institutions.
Oh,
so the first thing is, well, just think about it. if the furniture was moving around and there's spirit voices coming out of thin air, back then, you were considered insane or obsessed by the devil, possessed by the devil.
The devil. That's, yes, I can see that. Oh, my goodness, that's
so
terrible.
Parents who are sympathetic to the gifts are one of the main things of why the Bang Sisters flourished. But back in the early days, materializations, the furniture moving, large clumps of coal would suddenly manifest in the middle of the floor of their living room out of nowhere. Furniture moving, the plates would position themselves on the table in front of eyewitnesses. But all this went on, but the parents were sympathetic, as I said, so they formed a development circle, and they developed the girls little by little.
There's so much there. Let's pause for a moment. Materializations, are you saying that people would appear in the room and look physically present?
Right. They would appear. Etherealizations would appear in front of the whole family with spirits that could be seen like a negative standing there.
Oh, fascinating. And were they saying, I want this to happen, or was it sort of like poltergeist activity? It just happened around them. They weren't controlling it.
It was poltergeist activity at first as such, because it just happened. Their mediumistic force was so strong that things would just happen in the house. I've seen this before with a handful of mediums from that time period. But what I want to say is that the Bang Sisters were what is called physical mediums. With a physical medium as compared to a mental medium.
Right.
With a physical medium, the manifestations happen apart from the mediums, which can be objectively seen, heard, felt, and smelled by the sitters or those that are witnessing it. Materializations, voices coming out of the thin air, things moving, spirits walking around. Conversely, a mental medium is someone like James Van Prague or John Edwards, where they sit and they receive messages clairvoyantly from the spirit world and then translate that to the people and give you their messages. Bang Sisters were physical mediums.
But they were. But did they go into trance? Were these phenomena produced when they were in trance?
I know of no instance of them being in trance.
Really? I think that's fascinating.
Well,
because nowadays it usually happens in some sort of trance state. So this is powerful stuff that they were able to do. And you say there were a lot of witnesses, and they left written accounts of what they saw.
They did. I was lucky to find. Well, the horrible thing, it's one of the despairs of research, is that not much was ever written about the greatest mediums. People just didn't put pen to paper. It took me years and years and years to find out all the information about the Bang Sisters, because I was so astounded by their phenomena, which I should say at this juncture, their main phenomena as they grew older was precipitated spirit portraits.
Your book has some wonderful examples of these. I mean, they don't look like someone painted them. They do look a little ethereal, but they're like real people having their portrait painted. How were they produced? What, they just appeared on the canvas?
Well, it's a long story, but essentially, you would go to the Bang Sisters' house. They lived in Chicago. You could either bring a blank canvas with you, standard 30 by whatever 40 framed canvas, or you could pick one of many canvases they had sitting there, blank canvases in their house. They would take the canvas and lean it up against the window and rest it on the top of a table. And the Bang Sisters would sit one on each side of the table and just literally hold the canvas up with their index finger and their thumb. In other words, they lean it against the window and pull the curtains along the side of it, so the only light coming into the room was through the canvas. The sitters could examine the canvas, go outside, look in the sunlight, make sure there's no markings, there's no trickery, there's no apparatus, especially if you brought your own canvas. You went to a canvas maker and purchased one and then brought it to the house yourself. there the sitter would sit at the end of the table, literally 2 feet from the canvas, and slowly the precipitated portrait of their deceased loved one would appear onto the canvas. Some of them were done in minutes. They're so lifelike, as you've seen in the book.
Yes, some of these portraits amazing.
Are so amazing. It looks like a photograph, but some of them were done in minutes. No scientist has ever been able to figure out what the media used by the spirits was. It looks like dust. I've seen 40 of these portraits myself up close, and it looks like fine dust, like dry cigar ash crushed in your palm.
Really?
I mean, it's very fine, fine dust. And some of the portraits I've seen are 110, 115 years old. It looks like they were precipitated yesterday.
Precipitated suggests, yes. And well, see, I thought as I looked at them, if they reminded me of anything, it would be very well smeared on chalk type or pastel type portraits, because there are no brush strokes. It doesn't look like paint. No. It is a powder. Could people see them start to appear and then get darker, these pictures?
Yes. Yes, definitely. It was truly amazing. I'm gonna pick out one that was written in the National Spiritualist. It was written after the Bank Sisters had passed away, but this is a really incredible one.
Yes, yep. Yes, share with us, please.
In the soft light of a homey little room on Chicago's west side, two men and women sat gathered about a plain oak table, standing close to a window facing an open court. The time was the late fall, 1894. A 20 by 24 inch frame enclosing a piece of canvas, such as is commonly used by artists, lay on top of the table. One edge of the frame rested against the inner sill of the window, held the frame and canvas in an inclined position. The window was so shaded over the top and sides as to allow the sunlight to flood directly through the canvas. Sitting as close as possible to the table, the men facing the canvas, facing each other on opposite sides of the table, sat the two ladies, each holding the upper corners of the frame with a hand, their heads bowed. They sat in studied concentration. Suddenly, the men facing the canvas leaned forward in their chairs and sat upright, their eyes wide and fixed on the canvas from which a thin, vapor-like, transparent mist was rising. Unmistakable, almost unbelievable and indefinable, they watched the phenomena take form. Beauty and mystery had entered the room. The sunlight pouring through the canvas was replaced by sweeping colors, and the supposedly dead took form and held the watchers spellbound. Impossible.
Yeah, impossible.
Nevertheless, somewhere, perhaps happening. Obscured by the ethereal mist, hovering over the canvas, spirit artists were at work, reproducing a conjured likeness of the long-departed father of a famous county attorney. The two men, an attorney and a financier and a lumber magnate, who had watched the transformation take place, stared at each other in amazement. It was the attorney who had procured the canvas, brought it to the séance room, fastened it in the frame, and then placed it in position. The strong light flooding the room window made deception unthinkable. All present were not only able to see the light of day through the canvas, but could also see behind and around it. So the astonished men took the portrait from the table and scrutinized it closely. Comments were generally favorable. The attorney said that while his father had worn a full beard in his maturity, he later had it trimmed to a goatee, which he considered more becoming.
Oh.
What happened was the guy said that his father had a goatee. The sisters replaced the canvas by the window. The spirits precipitated a goatee onto the canvas.
No, but not the full beard. Did that go away?
The full beard dematerialized, and then
my goodness!
Another incredible example in the book you'll notice is that a Dr. Doherty went to see the Bang Sisters because he wanted to try to get a precipitated portrait of his wife, who had passed away. He goes to Chicago. He brings his own canvas, which is highly evidential that the person could bring their own canvas, so no critic or anybody could say that it was prepared beforehand. How can anybody get around that one where the person brings their own canvas? He wanted to get a portrait of his wife. They sat, and I think only one of the Bang sisters was there, not two of them, just one.
Really?
His wife precipitates an exact likeness of his wife precipitates onto the canvas. Astonished, when it was all said and done, he puts the canvas down by the side of the chair, and he's talking to May Bangs before he leaves. He's getting ready to leave. The doctor picks up the canvas. Spirits, as a gift to him, precipitated onto the canvas his two deceased twin daughters and himself.
Yes, I'm looking at that picture. It is amazing. Do we know when those little girls died? Yes, I mean, that's it. And it wasn't even in the light.
One of the amazing things that's ever happened in spiritualism.
Yeah.
And there are other examples of that happening, too, where the spirits, the portrait would change. In some instances, people brought the canvases home and they hung the picture of their deceased loved one on the wall. The eyes would be closed in the daytime for a significant amount of time. Then it would suddenly open up.
Oh, that's creepy. Oh, my.
Ornaments and jewelry would disappear and then and rematerialize. But the main thing I want to say is that if you did your standard search of the Bang sisters on Wikipedia or something, it's going to say they were frauds.
Like, oh, everybody was a fraud to Wikipedia. Yeah, I tell people you have to ignore it altogether when it comes to anything related to this work because they're simply wrong. They're debunkers. This is a sad little thing people do when they don't they can't face trying to understand the truth. The easy thing is to say no, couldn't happen. So
well, most people do. I would urge anybody who's interested in life after death and spirit communication to please go and take the time to research the history of spiritualism. Find out who the players were. Just find out the whole story before you pass judgment, because some of the greatest minds who've ever lived researched spiritualism and were positively convinced of its truth. You know that, Roberta.
Of course, yeah. But what fascinates me about this is it wasn't this. But I'm looking at the picture, two beautiful little girls and the father there too. A picture of four people, not one. And
look at the one little girl has her part of her little dress is off
yes.
her shoulder.
Yeah, it's a sort of there's a sultry look there with one of them. But now you're saying that the other three people were materialized on this portrait. When it was they had just put it down by a chair. They weren't even looking at it.
Right. That happened numerous times with the Bangs. He just put it down by the side of the table.
Wow.
Yeah, that happened all the time with the Bang sisters. But that was one of the most astonishing instances of all time. I mean, that really. I'm so happy that I have a picture of that portrait.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's pretty. It's pretty too. It looks.
Pictures.
It looks very, very sweet. The book is called, and I can't recall, I don't have it in my head, the name of the book. What's the name of your book, Riley?
Portraits from Beyond.
That's right, Portraits from Beyond. I knew it had portraits in it. And I recommend this book if you just want to see something amazing that you had not dreamed was possible. Now, how were these produced? Because obviously something physical is going on if you have a physical picture. How were they? Do you have any idea how they were produced?
Well, like I said, there's such scant information on most of the great mediums, and I know this is difficult for people that are listening who have no concept of what we're talking about. It
right.
must be hard, but we're trying our best to explain it. But essentially, from what I've learned, the spirit artists would take the essential chemical ingredients from whatever was available. Like there's flowers in the room, the pigment of clothes, furniture. It doesn't matter what it is. As long as it was a source of energy, they would use it. Anything that was available. Outside of that, there's no real explanation of how they did it. And also, one of the great mysteries was it precipitated through the back of the canvas to the front or from the front to the back?
But oh, it was
no
on
one,
the back, too?
No one seems to know, but I can't imagine sitting there 2 feet from a blank canvas and watching a spirit artist or whatever it was do preliminary sketches, and then the canvas suddenly goes blank again. Then other sketches, then it goes blank. In other words, preliminary sketches, and then suddenly...
So they acted like real artists. Wow.
The very person you knew manifests onto the canvas. I just... And some of them, a great deal of them, were immensely huge, 60 by 40. There's a picture of Queen Victoria in my book. That's 60 by 40. Can you imagine that experience of sitting there and seeing that? Of a canvas now, that big.
There are canvases with people who were like famous people. One was Cleopatra. So they weren't loved ones. You bring in the canvas and you say to the Bang sisters, I would like my Uncle Charlie, or I would like my wife. But you might say, I'd like a picture of Cleopatra, and then they would do that?
I don't know. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how. There's no. Actually, Vice Admiral Osborne Moore, who was the great champion for the Bang sisters, he claimed that Cleopatra was one of his guides, and that's how it happened. Precipitated for him. But I don't think generally people would say, here's who I want a picture of. I don't think that's how it worked. The Bang sisters didn't care if he said anything, and there's no photographs involved. There was none of that, because the conjurers and the critics would, of course, pounce on everything. And they were maligned in the press all their lives, the Bang sisters, by the critics. And the general theory was they prepared the canvases beforehand.
This is an area where at some point we really all need to talk about just why there has been so much hostility in the media to what are really fascinating phenomena. And even if it's certain that they're real, as you said, go to Wikipedia and you'll read a bunch of garbage. They don't even attempt to understand what's true. But I'd like to talk just briefly behind this a little bit, because one of the things that has fascinated me is that it has seemed to me as if early part of the 19th century, very little was happening. And then suddenly, around the middle of the century, all of this starts going on. I mean, we have these little children who are mediums right from the get-go. They have powerful psychic energy. Nowadays, I don't think that happens, but it happened during this period. Do you know why? What's your theory about why there was this period of extraordinary psychic energy going on, even for children?
There was immense loss. I'm only theorizing, but having studied the subject almost 30 years, I can only still theorize. There was World War I, World War II. There was an immense, immense loss of life. So there was a need, some kind of a spiritual connection with this titanic amount of loss.
But why in the middle of the 1800s? Well, there were wars going on worldwide then as well in various places, wars of conquest. Yeah. I'll tell you what my theory is. Well,
yes,
this is what I think. And I think it primarily because of what's happened later. In the latter part of the 19th century, toward the end of the 19th century, physicists actually said, someone's quoted as saying, well, everything's been discovered. All that's left is finer and finer measurements. And right after that, of course, our dear friend Max Planck came up with, and his fellows, others did it as well, came up with quantum mechanics, and the whole world changed. Now, we know that those who are dead have been trying for a century or more than a century to raise the consciousness vibration of this planet, and part of that is helping us understand that nobody's dead. They're all still living. And we think, or I think, and some others have said, and stroked their chins, that part of this process was developing people as mediums in ways that really had not happened before. They could do it back then because it takes, to be developed as a medium takes a lot of sitting in the dark, in circles, as you say, in development circles. And they had nothing else to do. Before radio, what could you do in the evening except sit around in the dark pretty much? So they were doing that. And that's why we developed very, very good mediums, unlike anything we have today, because they had the time to do it. And they didn't have the disruption of TV and cell phones and all of that. But I think there was a concerted effort going on, and the quantum physics stuff was part of it, to bring us, to jumpstart us into a new understanding of what's going on. The scientists were supposed to study these phenomena and come to better understand reality as a result, and they were supposed to put it together with quantum mechanics, because quantum mechanics is our gateway to understanding the greater reality. It all fits together. And then they threw a monkey wrench into the works by deciding that they would only study material things, and they shut down any possibility of having this first attempt to inform us work. That's what I think. But anyway, I'm interested in hearing what anybody thinks. So if you have other ideas, please just send me an email. What are your thoughts on why it happened then, but it doesn't happen since, and what the people not in bodies might have been trying to do?
I've studied so many mediums from the past, the great physical mediums, you know, the great historic mediums, and if you work your way back in time, like you were saying, there was no distractions. Now, for instance, if you go to the gate at the airport and look around you, there's 65% of the people are all looking at their phones.
Yeah, right. That's true everywhere.
The distraction level is so intense now in our culture. But back then, the home circle to develop the medium in the family was a very sacred thing. Like every, you know, two, three times a night, or two, three times in the week, rather, they would gather in a very solemn spiritual thing and talk to the spirits. Then as time moves on, the mechanical age, and like just keep going through time, all the distractions keep getting more and more and more intense. And now you have cell phone towers and radio waves.
Yes.
Everything's changed. The food way back then was more organic. The water was more pure. It just, all the distractions now, I mean, distractions are the opposite of what is required for mediumistic development.
Or for any kind of deep thinking. Right. I was just going to say, I think there's a lot that we've lost in this. You get entertained superficially, but there's a lot of depth to human life that we lost. And I think probably we're on the track toward regaining. I have a hunch about that, but it's a big topic. But meanwhile, this is another of the wonderful books produced by John at White Crow Books. Tell us a little bit about him. I know he's someone that you and I both admire, John Beecher.
I do want to give a shout out to John Beecher and White Crow Books. His unending patience with this project with the Bangs, I'll never forget, never, because there was so many, because the White Crow Books deals mostly with textural books. They're just texts. There's not photographs. So I sort of drove him crazy with the how many photographs I had. But,
right.
It was okay. And then I want to give a shout out to Lilydale, the Lilydale Assembly in Camp Chesterfield, Indiana. Camp Chesterfield in Indiana, the spirituals camp, at the Het Memorial Art Gallery has 26 beautiful framed gallery of Bang sisters' portraits. I would tell everyone, go and see for yourself. And, of course, Lilydale Assembly, like I said, they've got Bang sisters' portraits there, too. I want to give a shout-out to those incredible places.
Now, where is Lilydale? I think a lot of people have heard of that. Where's it located?
About 60 miles south of Buffalo in upstate New York.
And there's a lot going on there still. If you're interested in this field, you might contact Lilydale and sort of get into the loop, because there is a growing interest in spiritualism and in the programs put on by places like Lilydale. So there's a lot.
YouTube, just go to your computer to YouTube and put in Bang Sisters portraits. You can see Bang Sisters portraits there too.
Okay, great. Easy. It's Bangs, B-A-N-G-S, Sisters.
That's right. Bangs.
I didn't know they were on YouTube. That's great. And they would have no idea about being on YouTube. That's what's fun. We've basically given eternity to people who had no concept of what their future would be.
Well, a lot of the great mediums the Bang Sisters included, and there's many, many more besides the Bangs. They deserve more than just to sit at your computer and hit the enter button, like Wikipedia or whatever. They deserve more than a Google search or Wikipedia. Get up off your chair and go and search out in historical societies or libraries. You know, take the time to, don't just go to the computer. Get up.
There may be a spiritualist church too. Many cities have a spiritualist church.
Yep.
And they often have books and serve, you know, they have their service. I love them because everybody's a medium, and it's fascinating to be part of this, these people who take all of this so easily. It's not remarkable to them at all. Now, what if someone
on the other hand, you can go to the computer and just go to like ABE Books or even Amazon and put in the keyword box, just put spiritualism.
Yes.
Or spirit seances or mediumship, and some interesting stuff will come up. But I've always loved going out to the old musty-smelling bookstores.
Yeah. Obviously, you love those old books, and I do too. But for many people nowadays, it's not as much of an exciting search as it is for people like us. But if someone
more beautiful to me than going to an old musty-smelling used bookstore with a little classical music playing in the background, and the cardigan sweater-wearing guy who's behind the counter, and you happen to find a gem, you know, the sequestered nooks of the bookstore. I love it.
It is. You make it exciting. Sound exciting to me, but I think many people are saying, "What?" But that's okay. There are all kinds of ways. Again, it's the Bangs Sisters, and this
Bangs
book is
Sisters,
terrific.
Right.
This is a handy way to kind of, you know, summarize and get what's going on here. It's called Portraits from Beyond, and these pictures will blow your mind, especially when you really get how they were established, how they were given to us.
Yeah, now, if you want to see two of the great pioneers of historic spiritualism, the Bang Sisters deserve, just take a look at that book. I'm telling you, it really sets the story straight about the Bang Sisters.
Riley, what if people wanted to contact you? You say you don't have a website for now. Is there a way they can send you an email or something if they're curious?
Yeah, I'll give you my email address right now. It's NRILEYH. N as in never. NRILEYH. NRILEYH. @hotmail.com.
At Hotmail?
Yep, hotmail.com.
Okay. And if you try it, it's not
you,
right.
Roberta, and I'll give you information about a new Facebook page I'm creating.
Okay, that's great. And then we'll be able to tell people. So if you didn't get his email address, if you contact me at robertagrimes.com, just the contact block there, I'll send it to you. So meanwhile, we have one more brief segment to go. And so it's time to just say thank you, Riley, for being here. This has been a lot of fun, and you've opened my mind to some new things I'm excited about. So it's so good to talk with you, and we'll have you back. There's another book I want to talk about, which is also exciting. Please understand, I always am thrilled to have you here. I never take it for granted. And never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really get what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is Erlendur Haraldsson. He's an Icelandic researcher and one of my heroes. I was having a lot of trouble putting things together, and then I read his At the Hour of Death. This is a book that he co-authored with someone named Carlos Osis. It details their four-year study involving 50,000 patients at the end of their lives, observed by a thousand doctors in India and in the United States. Huge study. And what they learned convinced me that what I was studying was real. So this is one of my personal heroes, and I'm delighted that we finally have arranged to have him come and join us. I hope you'll be there next week. This week, we've been talking with N. Riley Haggerty. Riley is another kind of hero. He has taken to heart the need to preserve some of the most amazing things that were produced in the heyday of physical mediumship that was, as I say, kind of a golden century, mid-19th to mid-20th centuries. Spiritualism is really just a part of it. There were energies at play during that time that we don't have now. And it would take probably a whole hour just to talk about all the reasons why. But it's wonderful that he is putting it together, because this is the century when all of this is going to become common knowledge. And when that day comes, people are going to want to know the history of what is the greatest movement for all of humankind, this coming to understand that our lives, our minds are eternal. And so Riley is a hero of that effort. And plus he loves books. I've never known anybody to talk the way he talks about books. Now, as you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and a new one is going to be The Fun of Living Together. It'll be out within the month, I believe, much sooner than we thought. All these books are available from bookstores on Amazon, and they're available in 33 languages on Amazon platforms worldwide. They're also available as audiobooks, so you've got no excuse not to read these books. If you have questions or if you want to talk about any of my books, I'd be delighted to hear from you anytime. Recent Seek Reality episodes are available on bbmglobalnetwork.com right here. And earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Green Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network. And it has affiliates worldwide. XZBN.net is where you go. Where it's also available as free podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. And if ever you get confused about where I'm broadcasting now, just come to robertagrimes.com and go to the radio button. If you'd like to read my blog, please do. I love to have people share their ideas with me once I've shared mine with them. Just go to robertagrimes.com, go to the contact box. I answer every email. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in Hour One Reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.